Well, welcome to another Comfort Reads episode. This time I am joined by Mandy Self, who was a previous guest on the regular Hugo show, and we're going to be talking about her comfort reading. So, Mandy, thank you for joining me.
I'm glad to be here.
Yes, I'm glad to have you back. You're one of those people who I think, you know, I'd like to know what's going on with them, but their podcast has gone a little dark, and so I'm not sure what's happening.
We're trying to resurrect it. It's just been we have a couple of episodes actually in the can, and Michael and I are trying to get those edited and uploaded. And we actually recently Michael finished reading The Wheel of Time, so we actually recently recorded an episode about The Wheel of Time. So we are hoping to get it all back up started. Things have just been a little crazy in the past year, but you know, now with coronavirus, we have a lot more free time. So
yeah, you'd think so. Being at home isn't always free time. So
that's true. But Michael and I don't have kids. That made it sound like we're married, which we're not. neither one of us separately has children.
Right. Yeah. So fun. Well, so for anybody who hasn't listened to the previous episode or to your podcast, why don't you give us a quick rundown of who you are?
Yeah. So I am Mandy, like Seth said, and my podcast that my friend Michael Gabriel and I do is Trivially Crucial, where we talk about different media, books, TV shows, movies, video games, and how they've, what we love about them, what we don't love about them, but a lot about how they impact our lives. Because I am someone who, fiction and media has really impacted me. It's really affected and shaped kind of how I see the world. And I always kind of, describe myself, like that guy in the, Star Trek TNG episode Darmok, right? Who talks in kind of metaphors, and that's
right.
That's kind of how I operate, and confuses the old people in my Bible study. So,
yes, I speak fluent movie quote.
Yes, I believe I sent an actual work email the other day that said Overkill is underrated. So, you know, this is
nice.
This is how I operate. So books and movies and stuff have hugely impacted me. And, you know, last time we talked about Speaker for the Dead, which is one of my favorite books and one of yours. So that was a great conversation. That's definitely a book that has hugely impacted me. And today we're going to talk about another one.
Yes. So good segue there. So why don't you tell us what you chose to talk about for comfort reading?
Right. So I chose Sabriel by Garth Nix, which is the first book in the Abhorsen trilogy. And really, I'm kind of choosing the whole trilogy, but Sabriel is the first book.
Yes.
And it's YA, but I think it was published. I'm gonna have to check. I want to say it was like 96.
It was right around. I think it was 95.
It's 95. You're correct. So this is before, you know, there was a lot of YA out there, if you will. YA kind of was drastically changed by Harry Potter and Twilight, which I'm sure we're all aware of. So this was published before Harry Potter. So there weren't a lot of books like this at the time, though I don't think I read it in 95. I found Sabriel at a book fair, as one does when you're a child. And that was basically, I think it was sixth grade. And my methodology for choosing books at the book fair was I chose the biggest book because I wanted the most bang for my buck.
Sure.
Because I was an avid reader. And at that time in my life, I was really only reading Star Wars books and Isaac Asimov, you know, like I do. And I saw this one and I was like, this looks pretty cool. You know, it's got a girl on the cover. She's got some bells. There's like a monster behind her. And it's big. That was really kind of the thought process that went into this.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at the copy of the book I have, there's not even like a description of the book on the back. It's one of those useless backs that just has like quotes from other people who at the time I did not know. Because once again, I was in sixth grade. So the quotes are from Philip Pullman and Lloyd Alexander, Publishers Weekly, an LA ALA book list, which might mean something to you if you're an adult. But in sixth grade, none of those names meant anything to me.
It's funny that Lloyd Alexander's on there because the first episode I did for Comfort Reads was about the Prydain books by Lloyd Alexander.
Yeah. Shamefully, I've never actually read those books. So, though I did see The Black Cauldron.
Yeah.
I know they're not, it's not a great adaption, but.
Yeah, we did a recent episode of Take Me to Your Reader on that one. So.
Yeah. So I picked up Sabriel and I devoured it. And at the time, there were no sequels. I don't think Lyrial came out. I'm looking now. Lyrial didn't come out until 2001. So that actually wasn't that much later, because when I would have been in sixth grade in 99. But when you're in sixth grade, 2 years is an eternity.
Right.
So.
No, I remember waiting for The Return of the Jedi to come out after Empire Strikes Back. So
let me tell you what the wait for the Goblet of Fire was like. An eternity, because I devoured the first three Harry Potter books in seventh grade. Goblet of Fire literally came out like the summer after eighth grade. So this is like a year and a half later, and it felt like an eternity.
Yeah. See, I came into that series at the Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
That's when I started reading.
I think that's when a lot of people did. Sabriel, for those who've never read it, is a book about a girl. She's actually like 18.
Right.
And she goes to school in a very kind of like British schoolgirl setting, though Garth Nix is actually Australian. So I imagine they have similar sorts of schools in Australia, which is the first time I ever came across the idea of like prefects and forms and things like that, right? All of that to me was equally magical, right? I mean, Americans talk about this when they read Harry Potter, that we were like, houses, you know, sixth years? What is this? Like all of that seemed like world building to us when it was really just British culture. And it's kind of the same for when she's in, and I cannot say it properly, I always say Ancelster. when she's in Ancelster, or however you say it.
The audiobook, Tim Curry said Ancelstier.
Very French sounding.
Yes.
But when she's there, it's very kind of this like British model world and education, kind of around World War I technology levels. So, you know, when she references like airplanes, it's very much like a biplane. And their weaponry is described as very World War I.
Yes.
But she is not from Ancelstier. She is from Across the Wall, which is the Old Kingdom, which is very much a high fantasy environment.
Yes.
And just having that juxtaposition in the same book is something I really enjoyed. That's like everything else is like real normal world. And then you have this one crazy fantasy world, and you don't have to go through a wardrobe to get there. It's literally the next country over. But, you know, you go there and it's like the stars are in a slightly different place. The weather is completely different. On one side of the wall, it's spring. On the other side of the wall, it's winter. So it's very kind of like to a sixth grader. I was super like enamored by this. Right.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the Sabriel is special. She comes from a special bloodline in the Old Kingdom, which is her father is a necromancer.
Right.
But he is a good necromancer.
Right. A particular kind of necromancer.
Yes. Because in the Old Kingdom, all necromancers are essentially bad. They essentially are enslaving people, raising zombies, you know, trying to thwart death. But her father puts the dead down. And there's a whole mythology that goes with this this world building of the, you know, charter magic and the, you know, great charters, which are the bloodlines. So, sorry, spoiler, I guess.
Yeah.
And so she is from one of these families, but she doesn't know it because she thinks that her father's name is Abhorsen.
Right.
And because she was raised in Ancelstier to keep her safe, essentially, because the Old Kingdom's kind of in complete disarray. But her father, let's go with dies. It's more complicated than that.
It is, yeah.
But at the beginning of the book, he dies, and he, through death, sends his information to her, sends his stuff to her, and tells her that she needs to he's in trouble or that he's dead and that she needs to kind of take over. And that's kind of the impetus that starts this whole story. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's kind of a super high level from 20,000 feet look of just Sabriel.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really, this is one of the books I've read the most in my life. Like I've read the most number of times.
Okay.
And I've read Ender's Game and Speaker for the Dead more. Mm-hmm. But I have read this one a lot. And the other interesting thing about Sabriel, for people who have never heard of it, is if you go to a big convention like Dragon Con, it never fails that every year there's at least one person cosplaying as Sabriel. And that's the one of the interesting things I love is that it's such a visual outfit. What she wears is that even if your cover doesn't, even if your cover doesn't have the outfit, if you see someone who's dressed like Sabriel, you know that's what they're dressed as. Because there's the bells, there's the blue overcoat with the keys. It's just it's very specific. And for lack of a better word, I'm going to go with iconic.
There we go. Yeah.
So
you could haul along a cat and call it Mogget.
Yes. Oh, I love Mogget. Oh my gosh. You didn't read Serial, Seth, but Lyrial. No. Sorry, that's the next book. But there's the disreputable dog. Oh my gosh, I love her.
Oh, nice.
And Lyrial and Abhorson kind of dig even deeper into the world building because it's actually the next generation. Like Sabriel isn't, I mean, she's an adult in Sabriel, but she's like 18, right? Lyrial, she's like her son is 18. And so it's kind of the next generation and the handing down of the Abhorson title and more into the world building and shenanigans. So, you know, When Sabriel ends, they kind of win, right? And it's kind of like the old kingdom is being restored. Lyrial kind of goes more into that is it takes place probably about 20 years later or so. And what's interesting about Lyrial is it actually starts with the Claire. And in Sabriel, the Claire are a throwaway line.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, you get two references to them, I think, and it's the sword, which says something like, the Claire saw me, the Wallmakers made me an Abhorson and wields me, or something like that.
Right. You have that one interaction with the two of them, right?
At the end.
And the paper wing, right?
Yes. Yes. I forgot about that. So the Claire are an entire civilization, for lack of a better word, organization, group of women who can see the future. And it's only women who can see the future. There are men associated with them, but they're no male Claire. And Lyrial is born among the Claire, but she doesn't look anything like them. The Claire are all like blonde and, you know, she's dark haired and she doesn't have the same temperament as them. And the big thing with the Claire is you don't really become a member of the Claire until you have your first vision of the future. Right. And so that's when you kind of go from like girlhood to womanhood. And both of these stories, Sabriel, the whole trilogy is kind of about coming into yourself in adulthood. Right.
Yeah.
In Sabriel, she thinks of herself as an adult at the beginning. And it's as she goes, she realizes she has less and less understanding of what actually is happening. Right. Lyrial is a girl who has been expecting her whole life to take on this mantle to be able to see the future, and it never happens. And it's they don't know what to do with her. Like she's still living in the children's dorm because the Claire are a very communal organization. You're not like raised by your mom or whatever.
Okay.
She's still living in the children's dorm, and she's living with like 11 and 12 year olds, and she's like 18. So you have her struggle and she doesn't know where to fit and they don't know what to do with her. So they eventually put her in the library, which sounds, you know, like a punishment, but the library is actually really cool in the book. It's like they have lots of weird things and it's super like, so she in the library, she ends up finding an artifact. That's a set of pipes, pipes that correspond to necromantic bells. And she finds pipes and a mirror, and what they allow her to do is see the past. And so now she's seeing the past and not the future. So she's like, well, maybe I'm still kind of the Claire, but I'm like a different kind is what she's thinking. Mm-hmm. Right. So on the flip side of Lyrial, you have Sam, who is Sabriel's son. she has a son and a daughter in this book, and the daughter is very clearly meant to be the next queen. She's the oldest. Like, that's very clear. Like, it's what she wants to do. And it's kind of what she's been setting up her whole life for. And Sam has no interest in being the king. So there's no really tension there, right? This is not going to be like a brother murdering his sister for the throne kind of story. No, right. The issue is that because his sister is going to be the next queen, what is the other option in this bloodline? Someone has to be the Abhorsen, right? And he doesn't want it. He wants nothing to do with it. And his mom keeps trying to go through the Book of the Dead with him, and he doesn't want to. Eventually, he takes the Book of the Dead, and she's like saying, you need to be reading it. And he's like lying, and he's not reading it. And what Sam's really good at is building things. And so the Lyriel is really about like, what happens when you're told all your life you're supposed to be something, but the reality is you're something else. And it's not that either of those things are bad. It's like being told, it's like when you go to drink your drink and you think it's water, but instead you get Sprite, right? Sprite's not bad. You just weren't expecting it, right? Like, in fact, Sprite might taste better, but sometimes you're just like, what was that? And so that's really what Lyriel is about, because Sam and Lyriel are both being expected to fit in these molds. Their parents, their societies, their families expect them to fit in these molds, not because they don't love them, not because they don't think that this is what's best for, like, their parents and families think this is what's best for them because they don't know that there's another option. Right. And so I don't know. That's always something that really like resonated with me growing up is, you know, like being your parents trying to fit you in a mold. And then it turns out that's not the mold that fits. And it's not malicious. Right. Sabriel's not trying to like hurt Sam by making him be the Abhorsen, but it was so easy for her to take on that role. Right. Like, because it was who she was supposed to be. But that's not who Sam is supposed to be. It turns out that that Sam is supposed to be a wall maker, which have been dead for a long time. But there was the charter has like imbued him with that power because there's clearly a need in this broken kingdom for people with that ability, because the charter stones are made by the wall makers and you have all these broken charter stones. Right. So that's something that's clearly missing. I mean, we haven't talked much about the charter, but I love the idea of charter magic and the charter, and you have free magic and you have charter magic. And then you have a couple of things like Mogget, that you discover that Mogget is like older than the charter. Right. And so is the disreputable dog, which is Lyriel's sidekick and Lyriel. And they're both very similar in that they're these free magic creatures with this charter magic collars. Right. And something Sabriel kind of says in Sabriel is that really shouldn't be possible. Right. Because it's like chaos energy and order energy. Like those things don't go together. Right. But it turns out that the disreputable dog and Mogget are actually part of the forces that created the charter. And the disreputable dog was bound willingly to the charter, and Mogget was bound less willingly to the charter. So it's very interesting. World building, and every once in a while, Garth Nix comes out with a new book that takes place in the same world, though they're not really in the same series. And so I kind of think of those as kind of separate. I love these books. I love them for the world building. I love them because, you know, these were books that were girl focused, high fantasy before that was really like a thing, right? Like, you know, even when Harry Potter came out, like Harry Potter's about Harry. Right. Hermione is kind of an incidental character in Harry's life. You know, Sabriel is about Sabriel. Lyriel is about Lyriel. And Sam has his own storyline, but Lyriel is clearly the title and more important character. Right.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that I was, as a kid, I was very anti-romance in my stories. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. Like, I didn't want romance, especially in sixth grade, right? Like, I'm just like, why are these people kissing? There's more important things to be done, right? And while, you know, Sabriel, it's clear that Sabriel and Touchstone are going to eventually grow into something more, there's not really a strong romance line with them. Right. And it's kind of the same in Lyriel. Like at one point, you know, I think it's like Lyriel and Sam meet up and you're like, oh no, what if there's going to be a romance thing? But then no, it can't, turns out there can't be, she's his aunt. Right. Like, so, and I was like, no, I don't want any romance. Cause it's not about, these are about So many YA books, and this is not to knock the genre. I love YA, right? But so many YA books associate coming of age with romance and having your first romance and that first kiss. And those were things that never resonated with me in my entire life. Like, I mean, obviously I'm married now, so romance, whatever. But when I was a teenager, like, you know, people, you had these whole YA books that were like, oh no, I'm 16 and never been kissed. And I'm like, I'm 18 and never been kissed. Like, and that's a common experience. Like, most of my friends didn't date. So it was just like reading these books where these girls are freaking out because they're like 15 and never been kissed. And I'm like, there's more to life than this. Why are we we should be saving the world. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what Sabriel's doing. She's saving the world. Right. Like, and her father, is the most important thing in her life. Right. And in the end, she, you know, kind of has to let him go. Mm-hmm. So these books have kind of always resonated with me and I've always loved them. And because I read them in sixth grade, you know, there's something I do keep going back to. But more so than any other book, I'm not rereading a lot of those Star Wars books I read in sixth grade. And, you know, I do occasionally reread Asimov, but it's not the same because Asimov is about men.
Sure.
There are barely women in Asimov. I really love the world building. I love the characters. I love the books. And if you were to see my copy of Sabriel, it's like held together with tape and love at this point.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, so it's probably a good idea for me to come clean here at this point and say that a book like Sabriel is not really in my wheelhouse. I'm not super attracted to fantasy. My conservative Christian upbringing kind of colors some of my opinions on this kind of stuff, because like a book like this is clearly one that one of my youth, like at youth camp preachers would have said would lead to demon possession because there's death magic.
Oh, no, I'm totally there. I was raised in very similar culture. And the agreement I had with my parents is the books could not come to church.
Right.
Like, it was the same with Harry Potter. You couldn't, like, my church was very anti-Harry Potter and fantasy.
Yeah. On the other hand, I did enjoy the book. And I listened to the audiobook read by Tim Curry, and he's fantastic. He says Sabriel, but I had read it as Sabriel before that. I really did like, well, there's a couple things that I really liked about this. One, that there was a notion here, I think, that Sabriel is essentially an adult and she feels like, hey, I should know everything by now because I'm an adult now. And, you know, you get to adulthood and you're like, oh yeah,
I'm a prefect.
Yeah. You get here, you know, I get to be in my mid to late 40s and go, I still don't know everything though. And so, I'm curious about, for you reading these books now, does that hit you differently than it did in sixth grade?
I mean, it does a little bit. But I mean, these books are so familiar to me. I don't know. I know what you mean. Cause like I've definitely read books and entire passages has resonated differently with me. I think the thing that gets me more now with them is less like, I don't know everything, because when I was in sixth grade, I didn't know everything. And then when I was 18, I was the person who would have told you, like, of course I listened to my parents. They have more wisdom to me because they're older. that was literally like, I was the kid parodying the party line, right? I didn't understand kids who didn't listen to their parents. I was like, we're 18. We don't know everything. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
I still acknowledge I don't know everything. And I think you're right. There's like no stage in your life where you think you know everything. I mean, some people go through their whole life always thinking they know everything, right. I guess.
Yeah. I feel like maturity means being able to admit that.
Yes. And for Sabriel, that's kind of her journey, right? Being able to admit that.
So I also, you know, one thing about fantasy that I don't love is world building. And I don't like when there's a book that's, you know, it's 300 pages of story and 600 pages of world building, where here I feel like you've given kind of some hints that later in the series, you learn more about the charter magic and that kind of stuff, where in this, it uses words like charter magic and you're like, oh, okay, charter magic is a thing. I don't know what it is, but I guess it's something. And I like the fact that it doesn't just, it's not super didactic, right? It doesn't go through like a book like Aragon, right? That goes through like the mechanics of the magic system. I don't need that kind of thing. I mean, not that I didn't enjoy that book, but that's not what I need. And so I like a book that will trust the reader to pick things up as they go along and then, you know, start to pepper in some details about what are these charter stones about? What's the deal there?
And the thing that's nice about that, right, is it's kind of like Sabriel's perspective, right?
Yes.
Because like she doesn't need to question where these things come from. They just have been,
yeah.
Right? She's not sitting here like, where did the charter stones come from? You know, like, because most of us don't wonder that thing that like, you're not sitting here wondering, I wonder who invented the toaster, right? You're right. Like, no, I have a toaster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I also, you know, I really enjoyed the different bells and that, I mean, to the extent mm-hmm. that there was any explanation of what different things did, you know, the bells were described, right? And when you describe that, okay, here's a bell where if we ring it, everyone who hears it, including the person who rings it, goes to death, right?
Yes.
And, you know, it's Chekhov's bell in a lot of ways. You're like, okay, that's mm-hmm. going to be used at some point. And so I was, throughout the book, I was like, okay, when's that going to be used? When's that going to be used? And I really enjoyed that point when that was used.
Yes. Yes. And I love how the bells can be combined in different ways to do different things.
Right.
And just like the general musical aspect of it. Right. Cause I was a very musical kid. Mm-hmm. I come from a very musical family. So, and I played handbells.
Oh, okay.
So
nice.
Whenever I was playing handbells, I'm like, I'm a necromancer. Mm-hmm. But of course I couldn't say that cause I was playing handbells at church.
Right. So yes.
Keep your necromancy to yourself.
Pretty much. Yeah. So this one, I mean, it's, in a lot of ways, it's almost like straddling the line between urban fantasy and high fantasy, because you literally have a wall between the sort of urban setting and the high fantasy setting, which was cool.
And I think it's very much a portal fantasy without the portal.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Kind of like Stardust in that way, right? Where there's a wall, you know, but not everyone crosses it. And in fact, the people in Ancestel are kind of, however you say it, and Celestier.
There we go.
Are kind of like in complete denial.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. It reminded me a little bit of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, where there's a kind of an unknown history to this world. But it sounds like it's not as unknown as in that book it was. I like the fact that there were, you know, tanks and automobiles and that kind of
yes.
stuff and radio.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just a nice juxtaposition, I think. And it's really interesting. And because in Sabriel, she is of the Old Kingdom and she goes to the Old Kingdom.
Yeah.
Right. And the two only interact when at the end, you know, there's kind of like an invasion, right, of
right.
the dead, which mm-hmm. is because her father dies. And what's interesting in Lyriel is you have Sam, who, like Sabriel, goes to school in Ancestier. And because of that, he's always telling stories. He goes home every summer, right, to the Old Kingdom, unlike Sabriel, who basically spent her whole time. He's telling his friends stories of the Old Kingdom. And in Lyriel, you see a character called Nick, who's from Ancestier, and kind of like gets seduced to the Old Kingdom and used by bad people for nefarious purposes because he doesn't know any better. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't. He's like, well, Sam's mom's a necromancer, so necromancers can't be bad, right?
Right.
You know, and it's like, actually, she's the only good necromancer. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So sort of to sum up here, because we don't want to go over long, sell people on reading this series. I mean, you've described a bunch of it already, but any kind of final thoughts about it or recommendations for people to read?
I would say if you like books that are about coming of age and magic and you can't be too squeamish. It's definitely about death.
Right.
But it's not not gory. And I would also say the vision of death in it is not it's not horrifying. Like you don't right. really get it in Sabriel, but in Lyriel, she goes through all 9 gates. And she goes all the way to the last one. And it's actually a really comforting view of death. And so I would say these are books about becoming yourself, in the shadow of your parents, but not about divorcing yourself from your parents. In none of these books do the kids look at their parents and say, they are horrible, evil people, and I must not be like them, right? They are trying to live up to their parents' legacy and in their shadow while also becoming their own people. And still everybody loves each other and has healthy relationships.
Yeah.
And if you like hints at greater magic that you are never fully going to understand, this is a series.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like the vision of death is closer to kind of the Greek, you know, Hades. And I mean, Hades didn't have, you know, the nine gates or anything, but there were different parts of Hades, right?
Right.
Cool. Good stuff. Alrighty. Well, I think that'll about do it. So Mandy, I really want to thank you for coming on and for being an early volunteer.
Yeah. I'm always happy to talk about books.
Yes. Yeah. It's always nice to give people a chance to read something that they might turn into their comfort reading.
Yes.
Alrighty. Well, you know, I hope to see some Trivially Crucial episodes show up in my podcast player in the relatively near future. And if you do need help with editing, let me know. I might be able to help. So I'm sure I'll talk to you down the road.
Yes.
All right. Bye. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that discussion with Mandy. I hope you're enjoying this series. I do have quite a few guests lined up for this. And if you'd like to volunteer to do one, you can go ahead and reach out to me at Hugo's Podcast on Twitter or feedback@hugospodcast.com or go up to hugospodcast.com and fill out the contact form and let me know that you'd like to come on. I did realize that I didn't get Mandy's contact information verbally, but I will drop that into the show notes, and obviously I'll tag her on Twitter, the Twitter post for this. My hope for this series is just that, you know, we're going to talk about things that bring us comfort and pleasure when we're reading, and I'm hoping that somebody out there will find some use from it and maybe find a new comfort read title or something that will, you know, be a bright spot in 2020, because I think we could all use that. So thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye.